come on, people. I need your help. We're recording the podcast tonight this week. And I wanted to be on time. John does not like when I start late. I blew through a red light. The light turned yellow. I was like, John, I can't be late. And then I saw the flashes coming on. That's like a $75 ticket at a minimum. I need you to buy a shirt. Stop being a freeloader. If you've never sent me a dime of money, do it now. We have the best shirts in the business. Shop.letsrun.com. We recently got all the sizes in. Extra small, extra large, double extra large. The best shirt by far is the long sleeve dark blue. It's amazing. It's so soft. Get one for you. Get one for your spouse. You guys will probably have children within 10 months. Like, you'll want to wear them and stay in bed all day long. They're so soft. Use the code TICKET. I'll give you 10% off. TICKET. 10% off. Shop.letsrun.com. Also, I tried to watch a meet the other day on CNBC. There's so many ads, I couldn't deal with it. You got to use the VPN we use. Letsrun.com/VPN. Letsrun.com/VPN.
Welcome, everyone, to letsrun.com After Dark. It's the letsrun.com Track Talk podcast. Big episode on tap for you guys and gals this week. USATF has decided not to send a team to this summer's World Under-20 Championships in Peru. 69 boys broke 9 minutes for 3,200 meters at the Arcadia Invitational, and Parker Valby is scheduled to make her 10K debut on Thursday. Oh, and there was an eclipse on Monday as well. Hopefully we'll have a report from Weldon Johnson, who was in the Path of Totality. He's scheduled to come on later on the show. The Australian Olympic trials as well, there this week in Adelaide. There's a killer men's 1500. We'll preview that. Try to figure out how Australia is picking their team. Oh, and the 128th Boston Marathon is on Monday. That might come up as well. This is Jonathan Gold. I'm joined by Robert Johnson, co-founder of letsrun.com. Weldon Johnson, unspecified delay, but he apparently will be appearing at some point on the show. But I love it. It's Let's Run After Dark. I mean, we're 2 minutes in and we already have Robert admitting to breaking the law. Robert asking people to procreate in the letsrun.com t-shirts. And now I've got a beer here, Robert. It's a Guinness. I'm going to crack it for our podcast, if that's all right. I feel like we usually only do this after meets, but if it's a Let's Run After Dark, I feel it's appropriate. So I'm going to go ahead unless you say something against me.
By all means, Jonathan. I don't want young kids to think it's all about drinking. It looks like a Guinness. I drink a 0% Guinness. Gives me the same buzz almost as back in the day. A lot of it's like the placebo effect. So if you don't drink, you don't have to drink to be cool. But it's good to relax and enjoy life. That's all I'll say.
It's been drink responsibly, always. But I like to think we pitch this podcast as just some of the things you would talk about with your friend at the bar after a track meet. And I guess we're kind of making that literal. Try not to have two. I would cut myself off no more than two beers. Otherwise, I'm going to just start talking craziness. You know, it's still going to do my job here. Still being paid to do this.
I agree. And I don't want to get too deep here, but something happened with one of my ex-runners. Like, life is to be enjoyed, people. If you're struggling, reach out for help. 988-988. Pick up the phone. If you're in the U.S., they will help you. But John, it's a little disappointing Weldon's not here. We delayed the podcast till 8 p.m. so he could show up, and then we get a text. So as a married man and as a father, one of two things has happened. He's either in trouble with the wife. He's been gone out of town for like 4 days. He flew down to Texas for the eclipse. He forgot to do something. He's in big trouble. Or more likely, the daughter is still on Central Time Zone. Her sleep's all messed up. She didn't get to sleep because they've got her on a very tight sleep schedule, but maybe she thinks it's, you know, still early in Texas, so she's not ready to go to bed, and that's why he's not here.
Well, my worry, Robert, was are Weldon's daughter's retinas okay? Because my whole thing is like, I was talking to my family yesterday, like, what do animals do? Animals don't know that there's an eclipse on. They're not told, don't look up at the sun. And I see this picture of a bear. I'm just like, dude, you're frying your retinas. You're going to ruin it by looking at the eclipse. And I'm sure Weldon had the glasses for his daughter, but I'm like, you know, she's what, 3 years old or something? Three-year-olds throw those things off all the time. So I just hope that her retinas are okay. There's not going to be another eclipse for 20 years, so you don't have to worry. North America, so you don't have to worry about it. But that's my big thing. If I have a toddler, make sure the glasses are on the entire time or that they're looking down, you know?
Projection, John? I got a true or false. I got a projection. I got a text from you yesterday. It said, my vision is blurry. I just stared at the sun for 5 minutes.
True. Do you want to read the next text I sent you in that conversation, Robert? Yeah, I was kidding.
Hey, sarcasm.
I didn't do that. I was salty, though, because I tried to get the eclipse glasses. I went to the public library on Friday. They were out. I went to Warby Parker on Sunday. They were out. I guess I could have ordered ahead, which is, seems like what your wife did, but I was shit out of luck. So I only got the eclipse by... We weren't in totality in Boston anyway, but I got the... I just looked around and I looked on the ground, essentially.
I remember doing the ground like 30 years ago. What is that? The glasses helped a lot. I was asking my wife, though, how do we spend so much money? This is the reason. Like, we had like $40 glasses, but they were helpful. Now, did you notice like it wasn't as bright? We had about 88%, probably similar to you. Like, I'd actually been driving to pick my son up at school, like about 20 minutes before the peak moment here. And when I was trying to take a picture on my iPhone, and I kind of looked at the sun for like 5 seconds by mistake. And when I got out, I'm like, it looks a little bit, the wind seemed to be picking up. I hadn't been outside. I've been in the car. I'm like, it seems colder than it should be. It didn't seem quite as bright. And I asked my wife. She's like, no, I think it's just a little bit cloudy. I'm like, nah, I think it's the sun's being blocked by 89%. It just doesn't seem like
part of this is what my mind had been primed to accept this. I'm like, it's an eclipse. Something different's happened, like happening. You know, I was prepared to expect something different. But then I walked outside. I went to a hill in my neighborhood to see what it looked like. And it really did feel as we approached totality that it was as if I was looking through the world in a pair of sunglasses. There was just, it wasn't as if there was no light. It was just the light I was seeing seemed a little dimmer. At least that's what my brain told me.
And married guys that Let's Run will enjoy that. I almost tricked John. I told John it was a thing on these dating apps on Bumble to try to find a girl and last for the entirety of totality.
Oh my God.
Somebody told me it was only 2 minutes where he was. So that would be doable. That's all I'm going
to
say.
Oh, my God. Well, Weldon may have to edit this out. I can't believe it. I mean, it's Let's Run After Dark. And Robert, wait. You say you almost tricked me. No, you didn't. That's just a lie. You tried to trick me unsuccessfully.
But the real reason, in all seriousness, the reason why Weldon is not here, I don't want to turn this political, but I'm on Twitter right now, John. We have a Yale grad. A Yale grad who's a member of Congress said that a full moon is a complete rounded circle, which is made up mostly of gases. I think that appears to be factually incorrect. And that the sun is mighty powerful heat and that it's almost impossible to go near the sun. Honey, I think it's pretty impossible to even look at the sun like millions of miles away like we are. So I think Weldon's a little bit, like his look, if you're listening to this podcast right now and well, have you been listening to for the last, how many years have we been doing it, John, regularly?
Oh, this is year six. Wow.
Holy God. Oh, since my son was born, I guess. Not going to, but if you've been listening religiously for the last 6 years, and if you've ever felt bad about not having an Ivy League degree like the three of us do, just...
Robert, are you trying to turn people off the podcast? Bad. We start off by talking about the eclipse and nothing running related, and now you're making wonder, oh, did you ever worry? Wonder if you had an Ivy League degree? You just sound like an asshole.
I'm just
come
saying,
on,
it's,
man.
I'm saying it's worthless now. I mean, there's a reason why Weldon and my dad and George W. Bush all went to got into
all
Yale.
Right,
obviously,
all right,
that
all
degree
right.
is worthless.
Let's talk running. We got a bunch of things. What do you want to start with this USATF travesty? Should we talk about Arcadia, Parker Valby? What strikes your fancy?
Since I'm kind of inappropriate to begin with, I don't want to talk about the high school boys in 69 sub nines. That's a little risque. I want to start with outrage of the week. You texted me yesterday this may not move the needle for a lot of people, but USATF is not sending a team to the World Junior Under 20 Championships this summer in Lima, Peru. And this will be now the second time in three championships that we haven't sent anyone. But they want everyone else in the world to come to the meet in 2 years in Eugene, Oregon. This is ridiculous. Like, World Athletics needs to have a backbone and just say, like, okay, if you can't demand that everybody comes to your party but never go to their parties, we're going to strip the meet from you in 2 years. Like, this is so bad from USATF. Like, many, and it just proves so many points about the dysfunction of USATF. Play the Rojo rant music. I've always claimed that USATF does not really care about the athletes, and this is proof positive of it. Number one, like, I know it's high schoolers mainly, some college freshmen, maybe college sophomores, young teenagers, but a lot of them are not going to go on to Olympic stardom. This is their only time, the only opportunity they'll have in the entire life to represent this country in a competition, and this has been taken away from them for no valid reason. The reason we got was security was often cited. Peru is on the same, has a murder rate that's 58% that of America. It's level two on the State Department list. It's the same level as United Kingdom, dangerous countries like the United Kingdom, France, where the Olympics are being held, Denmark. It's just a joke. And I my only assumption is that USATF, and I've heard this rumor, you said, you told me you heard this rumor, John, they're having budget problems and they're trying to save money. Like, they spend more than seven figures on Max Siegel's salary every year. And most people don't think that this Nike deal, that's a 23-year deal, has been indexed for inflation. Well, this great Nike deal is worth 23% less than it was 5 years ago because of inflation. Like, this is so upsetting to me. I could spend a whole podcast on it.
Yeah, I was surprised when I saw this. And apparently people on the message boards have been speculating about it for months. It was something that was discussed perhaps at the annual meeting or in the months after that. But we often criticize USATF for lack of transparency. And in this case, they outlined their reasons. They gave the first reason they said was they were concerned about athlete safety. The second one was the date of the event. They said that being August 26th to 31st, which is a bit later than usual for World Juniors, athletes are going to miss school, or they're going to be in the cross-country season for the distance runners. And then the third reason was competitive readiness. They're basically saying, you know, athletes, the U.S. Under-20 Championships are the second week of June, and this meet is until the end of August. There aren't going to be as many opportunities for athletes to compete in between. Are they still going to be in shape? And look, they gave these explanations. I just don't think any of these reasons are very good. This is why people, and you and I, are wondering, is there another reason here? Is it to do with the financial realities of they want to save money and not send a team? Because I think all of those reasons just aren't very good. You outlined the security one. I think we should also note, 2 years ago, the U.S. sent a team to Cali, Colombia for this same meet. And Colombia was a level three travel advisory at the time, which is one higher than Peru is right now. It's like level three is reconsider travel. And the U.S. still sent a team to that meet. And then the other two things, the date of the event. I mean, come on. Is this, look at like Australia or South Africa. A friend of Let's Run, Carl Dennehy, pointed this out. Like, that's in the winter for them. That's well after their track seasons are concluded. They're still going to be sending teams to this meet. Then the other thing, competitive readiness. Like, look, the U.S., the kids who make this team, I don't think most of them are just going to show up and go through the motions. I mean, maybe you get one or two, they just happen to make the team and they're happy about it. Most of these kids, it's a world championship. They're representing the U.S. I think most of them are going to take it seriously and want to compete well. I'm sure the U.S. will do well and they'll win a bunch of medals as they always do at this meet. And to me, it's a shame that the number one track nation in the world isn't supporting one of the biggest meets in the world and one of the biggest pathways for developing future stars. This is a meet where athletes like Grant Fisher, Yared Nuguse, Noah Lyles, many great stars of the American track and field team right now got some of their first international experience competing at World Juniors.
And isn't the U.S. hosting the Olympics in 4 years? Theoretically, this would be the time to get the youngsters the experience they need. So either never send them to this meet or send them every time. This is a joke. The excuses are laughable. Like, the timing is not great for anybody. Like, do you think there's like high school meets for like the Europeans in the late summer? It's hard for anyone to find this meet. So everyone, maybe they won't run a PR, but you're still competitive. And, you know, there's been two other times when it's been roughly this time of the year. The first time was like 1998. I forgot.
96
in Australia. Yeah. 1996 in Australia. The U.S. actually topped the medal table. The most gold medals they ever won at the time, 6 and 12. Now we've won more since then. And then there was one time in China when we were like third in the medal table. But like, so what? We'll still do okay. We won't do as good as we would have done if it was like 3 weeks after USA's, but everyone else has to deal with it. And when the Olympics are late in the year, like they were last time, you deal with it. So like, I just feel like this must be made up, and it blows my mind. The only thing I can think of is maybe insurance company is worried about some terrorist attack or something like that. And then USAT can't insure it. Then guess what? Put in a one-page document, all caps. I will not sue USATF if my son is harmed. I will not do it. All caps. Videotape it. Like, I know there's still lawyers can still get around anything, but like, if you don't want to go to the meet, that's fine. Like, the end of August isn't ideal if you're a college freshman. Maybe 1/3 of the team is college freshmen, would you say?
No, I bet most of the team is either going to be entering the college freshman or they're entering college. So, yeah, sorry, 1/3 of the team entering their freshman year of college. I'd say that's about right.
I'd say like 50% are going to be sophomores in college, like 1/3 like freshmen in college, and then another, you know,
roughly that,
like,
yeah,
high schoolers. So, you know, if you're starting your college career, maybe you want to go to orientation or first week of class, fine. You don't have to go to the meet. Somebody else can take your place. But nobody's forcing you to go to this meet. And the distance runners, if that's your really, like, first of all, come on, USATF. Let's be honest. Are any U.S. men's distance runners, women's distance runners going to medal in this meet? Most likely not. So if you don't want to send the distance runners, which we never, by the way, USATF has never not sent people just because they weren't going to be competitive. But if that was the reason, then don't just send the distance runners, send the sprinters, send everybody else that's going to medal. But no, it's just some blanket thing. It's got to be an excuse for Max Siegel and these people. Like, it's mismanaged. The mismanagement of this organization is staggering to me. And yet, no one acknowledges it except for people like us. Well, it's crazy.
The thing I want to know is, and we reached out to USATF for this as of recording this Tuesday night, we haven't heard, is like, what are the specific security concerns about traveling to Lima, Peru that is worrying you? Because if you read the State Department's travel advisory, they say, oh, don't go near the Colombian border, or don't go near these river valley, these areas that are far removed from Lima. You know, traveling to Lima itself, it's a major global city. It's obviously not free of crime. No major city is, but I just haven't seen a compelling explanation for why it's so much more dangerous than, say, Paris, France, where the U.S. will be sending a full team this summer. So I'd like to hear that.
Correct, John. When we were reserving our Airbnb, and we're reserving in Saint-Denis, right?
Saint-Denis, yeah.
Like, we were worried about the Google Saint-Denis and crime. You see a lot of it, and it made us a little bit nervous. So we double-checked with the host, and yeah, I mean, I can be killed here in Baltimore. I can be killed in Paris, France. It's a risk I'm willing to take. And this is ridiculous. This is absurd to me. Rant over.
Yeah, the bottom line here is one of USATF's biggest mandates, one of their primary jobs as a federation, is to pick teams and to send them to global championships. And they're not doing that. They're letting the athletes down. And they're supposed to serve the athletes. That's what's disappointing about this.
Speaking of administrations and bureaucracy, on a more positive note, Jonathan Galt and I, well, I guess John wrote it, but I had some help on it, have published an article to make World Cross Country important again. We have a simple solution to make everyone want to go to World Cross, and that is to make that the primary vehicle for qualifying for the 10,000 at Worlds and the Olympics. It's now up on the website. We'll link to it in the show notes. So that's a more positive thing. World Athletics, we hope you're listening. Please make those changes. On Friday's bonus podcast, every Friday we have a second podcast. When we started, we called it the Friday 15 because we thought, how could we possibly talk more than once a week? I think now I could do a daily podcast for like an hour. but
I'm worried about that, Robert. I'm worried that if you're doing a daily podcast for an hour, within a month, you're going to get canceled, or you'll slip up and something will go wrong. It's probably best we don't.
But it was a very interesting podcast, and we said, which Americans that made the team last year for Worlds will not make the team for the Olympics this year? And it was interesting. Like this, the research that we did basically says that there's a two-year gap, about one-third of the athletes should be expected to make it. If it's a one-year gap, it's about one half should be expected to make it. And when I re-listened to the podcast, John, and I don't think I ever made this point explicitly clear, and we probably should have thought of it this way, but like basically, which athletes have a less than 50% chance of repeating? And then we kicked them off the team. And we basically kicked half the people off the team. So if you missed it, I'll give you I'll give you the Cliff Notes version. We kicked Isaiah Harris, Joe Wascom, Sean McGordy, Joe Klecker, Sean McGordy again, Bernard Keeter and Isaac Upduck off the men's team. On the women's side, we kicked Kayla Edwards, Corey McGee, Ofthingmo in the 1500 off the team, as well as Natasha Rogers in the 5000 and Elise Cranny and Natasha Rogers in the 10,000. I think we basically kicked off the perfect amount, John, 50%. It was an amazing podcast. Let'srun.com/subscribe so you won't miss out on this week's podcast.
Yeah, it sounds rude and unfeeling. I mean, there is some science to it. And basically, like, our point is, like, I respect all those people as athletes. I know they're going to, a bunch of them, some of them probably will make the team. But our thing was, like, look, history just says a bunch of these athletes aren't going to be making it. Who are the most likely to get left off? And that was kind of what the conclusion we reached. So it didn't mean any disrespect to athletes, but sometimes you got to make the hard decisions. Another thing, Robert, I thought I got an email this week from listener Ryan Winkle, and he pointed out Sebco did a podcast with World Athletics in Glasgow, their Inside Track podcast. It's their house podcast. And he brought up something that I thought was very interesting. And I listened to the show today. They were talking about the Devon Allen full start situation at the 2022 Worlds, which has been something of a crusade for you. He full started. Devon said that, you know, he didn't jump the gun. He just reacts faster than other athletes. And then we, you know, did some research, and there was clearly something different about the starting systems compared to previous championships. And Sebco said he still felt a little uncomfortable about that whole situation. And they've actually been discussing possible changes to full starts. One would just be you eliminate the 0.100 reaction limit. It's just if you leave the blocks after the gun is fired, you're good. And if you go any time before, it's a full start. His other potential thing, and I don't know if he got this from listening to the Let's Run podcast or what, but it's the one you always bring up. If you full start, you get a penalty and you just move back a meter or two. And he actually treated this as like a legitimate solution. He's like, kind of makes sense. We might do it. So I don't know if people, I'm sure some people at World Athletics have listened to our podcast from time to time, but it sounds like some of these solutions actually have a chance of being implemented.
Oh my God, the Robert Johnson rule times two. Can I sue for royalties? This is amazing. Seriously, if you're like a billionaire and you need someone just to like throw out ideas for your company, I'm the man. I'll be the most amazing consultant ever because I come up with these ideas. I just can't follow through. Like I have the most amazing beanie design for Let's Run. Hopefully it'll be here by the 2026 World Cross Country Championships, but I haven't had it made yet. But well, that's exciting, John. Seriously, like, that reminded me that that's another thing I haven't gone followed through on. I need to re-update my article that proved it was a statistical, basically impossibility for all these false starts to happen in Eugene. And I wanted to show you like how it all went back to normal this year, but I haven't bothered to do it. But that's fun to hear.
Yeah, the Let's Run audience is also waiting eagerly for installment number two of Dear Distance Gurus. So hopefully they can expect that sometime before the end of the year, Robert.
John Kellogg and I are working on the second edition. He was hit by a car while riding a bike that that didn't set him back that much. By the way, if you are I mean, it definitely hurt him. He's in pain over here. If you're a personal injury lawyer, I need to hear from you, and you can practice in Maryland, because I don't really believe in suing, but there's real damages here. RobertLetsRun.com.
That's like one of the most common advertisements in the United States of personal injury lawyers. You need to just go to some bus stops or walk around and look at billboards or turn on television. You'll see a personal injury lawyer ad.
I don't want to trust a sleazebag. I want a legitimate, like, trustworthy person.
Well, sleazebag, these are the people with the advertising money to plaster their name and face all around the world. They probably are doing winning a fair amount of their cases.
33%. I'd rather give the 33% to a loyal Let's Run the Comp Supporters Club member. John loves to ride his bike. Now he can't ride his bike. This is like 2 weeks out. How many long has it been, John? Week and a half, and his leg is still like elevated on top of a table.
Oh. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. Best wishes to John Kellogg. Hopefully he can heal up and will be returning to riding his bike again soon. All right, Robert. How about Arcadia? Because we wrote about this in the week that was. The boys 3200 at Arcadia is essentially what the BU 5K is for high schoolers.
So,
and
John always assumes our listeners know what we're talking about. We're talking about a high school 3200 meter. That's 8 laps of the track race in California.
Okay. How specific do I need to spell this stuff out? You think that our listeners don't know that 3200 meters is 8 laps of the track? Like, most tracks in the United States are 400 meters. Some of them are 440 yards, the very old ones. They're now mostly synthetic thanks to technology advances in the last 50 years. I was trying to explain. It's sort of what the BU 5K is, and that's a 5,000 meter race indoors. It's 25 laps because the track is only 200 meters long. But anyway, it's where a lot of the best high school boys will go out to try to run really fast. And the matchups this year were great. I mean, I've been clamoring for this showdown between Daniel Simmons and JoJo Jordan and Drew Griffith, because Simmons and Griffith were two of the best guys. They both broke national records indoors. Simmons from Utah ran 13:38 for the 5,000 indoors. Drew Griffith ran 8:34 for the 2 mile. They didn't end up really racing each other. They raced each other, I think, at the New Balance Indoor Grand Prix, but in terms of the championships, you know, they didn't race in cross, they didn't race indoors. They were in this race against each other. JoJo Jordan, the NXN champion, was there. It ended up being a battle between Daniel Simmons and Nathan Neal of Bozeman, Montana. And Simmons won 8:34 to Neal's 8:35. But I was looking at these results. It's just that the depth is out of control. 69 guys broke 9 minutes, which was 25 more than last year. Last year was the previous record of 44. This time it's 69. Like, 20 guys in the B heat broke 9 minutes. 28 guys broke 8:50. As recently as 2018, 8:50 was winning this meet. And the top seven guys all broke 8:40. And as recently as 2019, no one had broken 8:40 in this meet. Nico Young set the record at 8:40.00. That was the meet record in 2019. So I look at this, I'm like, all right, this is just more evidence. Like, you know, obviously some of these guys are quite good. They're going to be, you know, some of America's best distance runners in a few years. But I look at them just like, breaking 8:40 used to be a huge deal, and now you've got seven guys doing it in the same race. American Fork, Utah had two guys on that same team do it. Daniel Simmons ran 8:34. Ben Jaster ran 8:38. The number three guy ran 8:46. The number four guy ran 8:58. And I'm thinking, all right, there's probably two things that are at play here. One, super shoes, super spikes. And two, it's a virtuous cycle. It's basically what's happened with BU. People run fast, so more people go to BU the next year, and more people run fast, so then more people go to BU the next year. It's kind of like that with Arcadia. You've got kids flying in from all around the country. I feel like those are the two main reasons, but you think there might be a third, Robert? What do you make of all this?
Well, one, they're running 3,200. They used to run 2 miles way back in the day. But so your two big theories, re-say them, John?
Super shoes and super spikes, and then just Arcadia has become the destination. You get more top athletes flying there every year.
Look, the biggest difference between now when I stopped coaching in college, like 12 years, I look at the Ivy League times. And back then, if you were banging on the door of four, you were pretty much dominating. Now you're getting sixth. The college times have gotten faster. High school got times are faster. Why? Shoes have obviously made a huge difference in the last 5 years. I also think a big aspect of it is what you said about the meet selection. Like, there's so many more time trials under perfect conditions. Like, that was a big reason why, I mean, Weldon in college would run pin relays in the wind, swirling winds, shitty weather. As a pro, couldn't break 30 minutes. As a pro, he ran 28.06. You know, mouth sack at night, no wind. Like, conditions matter. And now everyone knows to go to Arcadia. Everyone knows to go to BU. So those things are gigantic. But I don't think it's – do I think a shoe is worth 13, 14 seconds in the 2 mile? No. 8, 10 maybe. The third thing that I would say, but I don't know why this would have changed that well, you know, in the last 5 years or so, but I think the coaching is better. Like, when I started in the Ivy League in 2002, it wasn't that hard, to be honest. Like, you got a somewhat talented guy, trained him properly. Half the league was training him properly. And if you got him down to like 14, 20, 29, 30, dominated the league. 402, 403, crushed it. When I was leaving 10 years later, these guys, the coaches, the rival coaches were all pretty good. You know, and one of them has gone on to great success. A guy asked me once, like, how do you do your tempo runs? I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, do you do it by pace, by time, by effort? I'm like, kind of all three, but, you know, but he was learning. And then he started kicking my ass. But, you know, I had guys running like 29.15, couldn't even score in the meet. So I do think because of the internet, coaching has gotten better. I think it first went to colleges. And then I think it's trickled down to the high school level. So now with Strava, you can see what other people are doing. I don't follow. I've never followed someone on Strava. Apparently, you can see their actual workouts. And then one of my good friends, Chris Catton, of Run CCG. I mean, this guy coached Craig Ingles. You want to be coached by Chris? Go to Run CCG on Instagram. He will coach you right now. I could coach you. John Kellogg could coach you. You could have the same goddamn coaching that Weldon Johnson had remotely that ran 20.06 and got fourth in the country. Now, so actually, if you want me, I only want to coach you if you're super elite. Let's run.com/coaching. I always say I'm going to do the coaching, but I never follow through on it. If you're really good, email me. Oops. Robert@letsrun.com.
Well, Robert dropped the F-bomb.
Some high school kid said he wants him to Flagstaff. I can't tell if it's a troll, John. He's debating taking a gap year. He's run 9 flags, getting very little interest. I'm thinking of taking a gap year to Flagstaff. I'm like, everyone's like saying it's a terrible idea. I'm like, no, this is a great idea. Do it. I'll coach you. So if you're that kid, I will coach you if you're not a troll. Robert@letsrun.com. We'll do it free. You'll rock the world.
I don't doubt that coaching has improved over the last two decades, Robert. My question to you is, do you really think it's improved significantly from 2019 to 2024? And I feel like that sort of Strava has taken off and that sort of thing. Because I don't know. I don't coach. You haven't coached really, no, the last 5 years. Like, I'd be curious to hear from high school coaches or college coaches. Like, do you think there's been an uptick in coaching quality the last 5 years? Because that's what I'm comparing it to. When Nico Young, when he was a junior, ran 8:40.00, that meet there was 14 guys sub 8:50, and now there's 28. So has it made that much of a leap in just 5 years?
What year was that?
That was 2019. I'm sorry, I actually misspoke. It was, there are only 4 guys sub 850 in 2019. And now 5 years later, there's 28. So I don't think coach, I mean, that's just, it's multiple, 7 times more. Maybe coaching's a little better, but I feel like the first two factors we discussed were the biggest ones.
I was wondering how many guys like broke to like 910. but it looks like 17 in the seated section, you know, 9 in the regular section. So 26 guys ran 9:10 or faster. This year we got 40, 69. Yeah. It's more than saying it's just shoes. But it could just be the, it's interesting.
Okay. I want to move on to the Brian Clay Invitational, which is this week out in California. Interesting name on the women's 10,000 meter start list. Paca Valby. We asked her indoors if she was going to run a 10K outdoors. She didn't really seem like she was thinking about it, but my guess is that, I see her name on the start list, and I think, is she going for the Olympic stand in this race? Because Paca Valby, we've seen her run, Robert. She kind of only knows one way to run. It's fast, and it's from the front. I don't think, something tells me she's not just going out to California to knock out a regional qualifier, which she could do easily by herself at SECs, even if it's part of a double. This, to me, suggests she's going out there to run fast. Do you think she might try to solo the Olympic standard? Is that even possible? Like, what do you make of this? Well, all we know is her name's on the entry list. We're not 100% sure she's running, because I think she was also in the 5K. But if she's running, I kind of assume I assume she's running the 10K, and I assume she's going to try to run fast.
I love your thinking. I was thinking somewhat different. This is why this is the best podcast and running podcast on planet Earth. I'm not going to say it's the best podcast, but talking field podcast. I was thinking on it. I had a totally different first thought. But this shows our different backgrounds. Despite being, you're pale. I'm not really pale, but it's being white, Ivy League. Old man.
I'm an old man. I'm 33. I don't think that's an old man.
Yeah, you're still young. Body goes to 35. Seriously. 35 is when I started to feel it. I know a guy made an Olympic team at 43.
41.
Can't count. Oh, 41. And by the way, women, no one will tell you this except for me. The eggs start to dry up. People are afraid to say that. It's like people are afraid to say that men are better than women in sports, but it's true. You don't want to spend tens of thousands of dollars in fertility treatments like we have been doing. So just getting that out there. But sorry, John, sidetrack. I immediately thought of it from the team standpoint. I was like, wow, if she doubles the 5 and 10 NCAAs, could Florida win the NCAA team title? And the answer is yes. Track and Field News has their first projection out for NCAAs. Arkansas is first at 52. Florida is tied for third at 41. They only have Volby in one event. Last time I checked, 41 plus 10 would be 51. Put them right in the hunt for the team title. So this could be actually, what's it called? A double, some phrase. Anyways, if she goes for the Olympic trials, Olympic standard, and puts Florida in the contention for the team title, it's like everybody wins.
I'm just thinking if you're going out to California to run a 10K, she's just going to go out there to hit the regional qualifier. I mean, maybe. I could see that. But yeah, I wouldn't be shocked by it. But at the same time, I don't know. I feel like the U.S. 10K spots, only two women have the time standard right now. It's Alicia Monson and it's Wayne Kaladi. And this is a woman who just soloed a 14:52 in the NCAA final in the 5,000 meters. I think 30:40 is a bit, it's a stronger performance than that, I would say. But do you think, like 14:52, do you think that puts her in the ballpark of running 30:40, or is that too aggressive, Robert, the Olympic standard?
Yes. Yeah. No, I think it's weird. Even though she barely runs, I feel like, for some reason, she'd be made for the 10K. She's great at just grinding at herself, pushing the pace. I feel like she's a 10K runner that runs the mileage of a 1500 meter runner or even a 800 meter runner. So we'll see what happens. I think it's, what are the odds I think she runs at that time? I'd say about 50-50. I don't think it's going to be hard for her. She's gotten like 14-25 and then try to see if she wants to pick it up.
You mean 15-25?
Most people would really struggle. Yeah, 15-25. And then most people would like have a hard time just bamming the pace out by herself, but she's used to cross training by herself. She's just hammering by herself. This woman's like a cheat code. So this is exciting. Whether she just doesn't matter to me. She can just get the time and then she might double at NCAAs. That's cool. She's all about the team. Hopefully she's getting some NIL money from Florida. And then she goes for the Olympic time. All the more power to her. Actually, when we were talking about the team on Friday, did we put her on the 5,000?
No, we didn't. We just
probably foolish.
Lack of a kick.
For the record, folks, if you're not a Supporters Club member, the main point of the contest was to tell you who wasn't going to make the team. It was not to tell you who would make the team.
But I'm looking at the NCAA all-time list. The record is 31-18 by Lisa Uhl of Iowa State. I feel like if Valby wanted to get that, she could run well under that, even solo. I just think she's a monster talent, and she's got the shoes if the conditions are good. I'm just going to be fascinated. She's never run a 10,000 before. And it's different from Nico Young, who was coming into the 10. He was getting to race pros, so he wouldn't have to worry about the pacing. We knew he was in phenomenal shape. We knew he was a real 10K guy. I kind of view Valby the same way. She doesn't run quite the same mileage, relatively. But I think her skill set should translate to the 10K. And I'm going to be fascinated to see how this plays out. Maybe she just goes out there and... She might just screw around and break the NCAA record, but if she's coming close to the Olympic standard, I think that would be really interesting. But I also don't want to act as if the Olympic 30-40 is seriously fast running. So yeah, that's certainly not a given. She might even get close to it. But I'm going to be interested to see how this race goes.
I don't think she's thinking for that time. But would it totally shock me if she got it? No. 15, according to John Kellogg, he's hearing us talk in the background. He can only hear me talk, John. He can't hear you. But he was saying that 15.5 is like 31.17, 31.18. So 14.50, 31.27. So subtract 16 seconds from that. You're right at the NCAA record. Now, he's like, she barely runs. I'm like, why would she break the record? Okay, folks. John, it looks like Weldon has popped up on our screen. Earlier, Weldon, I hypothesized that you were too afraid to show your face on the podcast after a Yale alum, I think she said yesterday that as a member of Congress, a full moon is a complete rounded circle, which is made up mostly of gases. And the sun is kind of powerful, almost impossible to go near the sun. It's a little bit more manageable to go near the moon. But I thought about another reason why he wasn't here, John. He was probably up in Storrs, Connecticut, with the college kids just going wild, celebrating the UConn victory. UConn, the state of champions, the home of Parker Valby, who we've just been talking about, as well as the UConn men's basketball team. Oh, wait, Weldon, before you answer, there were two other options. One, your daughter was still in Central Time, would not go to bed. And then the fourth was you were in the doghouse for being gone or something.
Well, no, my concern was you attending to your daughter's retinas. I hope that she was wearing the glasses the whole time, yes. Weldon, because I was like, that's going to be hard, keeping eclipse glasses on a three-year-old the whole time. They're always fiddling with everything. Like, so tell us about the eclipse and tell us why you were late getting to the show tonight.
After seeing the eclipse, John, I don't deal with the temporal, just being on time. I've seen the future. I know what happened to the Paris Olympics. It's all been outlaid for me. I would like to thank Robert for acknowledging greatness. I wasn't even in the great state of Connecticut. I was in the great state of Texas, and we still got it done. The most dominant team in college basketball history. Still couldn't name a single player on the team, but damn, they're good.
Donovan Klingon? Kling Kong? The pride of Bristol, Connecticut? I mean, I feel like, as far as like Connecticut legends go, he's got to be up there. He's a Connecticut native, played for UConn, won back-to-back national titles. He's probably going to be like an NBA lottery pick. You got to remember his name, well then. And he's 7'2". It's a beast.
My neighbors had UConn flags up. Probably the first time I've seen a UConn flag out. I'll see Buffalo Bills flags around here, Alabama Crimson Tide flags. So good to see. And I think Robert, yeah, the kid didn't want to go to bed. A lot of traffic getting in. Delayed flight. Good thing it was cloudy, though. Well, I don't know. If it was cloudy, I would just keep staring at the sun where I thought the sun was, hoping it would pop out. And then it finally would pop out. I'm like, wait, I'm supposed to have my glasses on. After repeating that a few times, I thought I might go blind, but I'm pretty sure I can still see today.
So it was cloudy and that kind of ruined it for you, Weldon? Because I feel like the reports I've seen on Twitter, people are saying, this has changed my life. It's reminded me that we live in a vast universe surrounded by stars and darkness. And I feel that my place in that universe, I now feel it for the first time. You know, it seems like I was like, wow, that sounds amazing. Like, this is one of these events people go through. It seems just universally beloved. Everyone loves the eclipse, and your take is decidedly lukewarm on it.
100% false, John. It was amazing. I was about 30 miles outside of Austin. It was pretty much 100% cloud cover. And I don't know, maybe like an hour out, every once in a while the sun would just barely peek through. And I was operating under the theory, I think I saw some Bill Nye article claiming that sometimes as it gets colder, the clouds clear up. But I was like, this is really thick cloud cover. But it would peek out, and then people were like, oh my God, put on the glasses. And we'd try to stare up at the sun. And you're like, wow, it would be like 80% blocked, and it's still bright as hell out, even with cloud cover. And then it got closer, you know, maybe 90. It's supposed to be like 134. It's probably like 115. It was getting a little bit dark. And then like the minute before, all of a sudden, it got dark real quick and temperature dropped. And then you're like, all right, full solar eclipse. And we're kind of happy, but we can't see anything. It's 100% cloudy. And then heavens part, baby. And there it is. I can't describe it. I mean, it seriously was nuts. So I kind of was describing all this to my wife, and she said, oh, he's kind of lukewarm about this. And I'm like, no. My aunt said, oh my God, this is proof of God. Like, I mean, she just was like, everyone needs to go see it. And then I'm talking to people in the airport. The guy behind me on the plane, he's like, I think I'm the only person in Austin that didn't see full totality, but they were in downtown Austin, didn't see it. Too much cloud cover. The lady next to me on the plane, though, said she was downtown Austin. Same thing like me. She said at one point it opened up and they could see it for a bit, and it was pretty damn amazing. But she was talking about traveling to Spain or Iceland in 2 years to try to see it again. And I was like, yep, I would consider doing it again. Everyone needs to see this damn thing.
Because you said something very interesting.
John, I'm shocked by this. When I was talking to him 20 minutes before the eclipse, he seemed depressed. And I was like, wow, God, I didn't go down there. And I hadn't heard anything since. Wow. I even called my mom. She did not rave about it like this. Now I'm feeling like I missed out.
He's probably just taking it all in. I mean, Weldon, do you view your place in the universe differently after witnessing this event?
I hadn't really thought of that, but to put it really clear that we're just a little speck on a ball floating through the universe, right? I hadn't really thought about that. But there's just something when it's fully blocked and like, you don't need the glasses. And you're just staring at it. I don't think I had my glasses on for a while before that. It's just, and then you see a photo of it. And it looks like the whites behind me in the head sort of looks like that being blocked out. You're just like, I'm like, no, that doesn't do it justice.
Oh, some
at
of
all.
The photos like, I saw were cool. Some of the ones with the diamond ring effect where it's like, some of the eclipse, like professional eclipse photographs, pretty awesome, I'd say.
John, my God, you tell me you didn't get on Hinge or Bumble or one of these websites. Say, hey, anyone want to drive up to Maine for the full eclipse?
No. I mean, I'm just going to go with some girl I just met. Like, hey, let's go witness the eclipse. I feel like that's something you want to do. Close friends,
John,
and family. I guess I was watching it around, you know, when I went up to that hill, it was mostly just strangers, you know. It was like, yeah, this is just something people do. You know, they want to witness it. It's not coming to the U.S. in another 20 years. So,
I mean, John, admittedly, I almost never got married and lived a life of bachelorhood, but it seems so easy now. But I remember studying this at Princeton University in psychology. Like, if you go on a tall bridge – with a woman, she will confuse her fear of the heights and the near death experience and the bridge with her love. It's like heightened senses and her heart's beating fast. She'll think, I'm in love with this guy. So if you take them to this wonderful eclipse, oh my God, this guy,
you're
Jonathan
telling
Dolph.
Me I should trick them into falling in love with me. All right. I mean, it's like the
placebo effect, John. We all know you're amazing. And I mean, you're one of the few remaining journalists, not just in running, but just in the world at all.
Okay. All right. Calm the praise. You need to play that Michael Johnson sound effect though, because now I realize you just said something very interesting, Robert. You said that you almost didn't get married, and now I'm thinking the reason why you bring up my personal life so much and all your theories about how to fix it is you're trying to live vicariously through me. You part of you wishes you were still a bachelor and could go out and, you know, get on these apps in the 50s, in your 50s. Oh, did I say 50s? I mean 40s. Sorry. Or I feel like you're blushing a little bit, Rojo.
Are you?
Honey, I don't want to be a bachelor. Please.
Okay, I'm glad. You have a wonderful wife, a lovely family, Robert. So I'm glad you're not thinking of abandoning it anytime soon. All right, let's bring Weldon up to speed here. Right as you got on, Weldon, we were talking about this. I don't even know if you know the news. I just want your reaction to it. Parker Valby is on the start list for the Brian Clay Invitational 10,000 meters on Thursday. When I tell you Parker Valby is going to run a 10K on Thursday, what are your thoughts? What do you expect from this?
Olympic standard, 100%.
Oh, see, that's what I was. My thing was like, why would she go out to California and run this race if she wasn't trying to run fast? This is how Parker Valby runs. Robert was far less aggressive. I mean, I think the Olympic standard would take a big performance out of her, but
I only said she's trying to put the Florida Gators on her back and win a national team title for her team. This is my college coaching background, but this is exciting that he said this. Both could be true.
Oh, speaking of the eclipse, Grand Blanks' great aunt was at the eclipse with me. She did not know about the injury. They were already talking about Paris and stuff. She's like, he's got a chance for Paris, right? And I was like, he's been injured. But let's just go there real quick, right? I outline how he makes the team. He's got to do a road race, right? He's got to get the standard in the 10. I think that's, if you don't have the standard on the track, is that your best chance? I think it is.
Well, he's already got the standard in the 5.
5's a lot more competitive. You want 2 cracks at the apple, man. And I think he might be a better 10K runner than 5K runner.
That's a good point. You go for the 10, but it's my understanding he's not even running now. It's April 9th. By the way, folks, you're listening to the voice of the Ivy League. I think it's been a 2-year hiatus. I've not been on ESPN Plus, but I've been recently. Ivy League executives realized the broadcasts weren't up to par. And they said, Rojo, we need you to do the broadcast. So I will be back on air in 1 month.
That's great. I'm looking forward to listening to you. Where are outdoor heps this year, Robert?
The armpit of America, Princeton, New Jersey. They said that as a joke because I'm a Princeton alum. Princeton is actually beautiful. Much of New Jersey is beautiful. If you've only driven through I-95, it's not like that, folks.
Yeah, even as a proud Dartmouth alum our teams were routinely destroyed by Princeton when I was in college and I wasn't a fan of theirs. Princeton itself is a nice town and they have a nice track stadium. What's the wise, if you're ever there for a meet, Hoagie Haven. That's the place, that's where you go to. Robert, did they have Hoagie Haven when you were in college? Like whenever I was at a meet, that was like, when you're done competing, you head over to Hoagie Haven and you get well fed. I imagine it was a great hangover cure.
Not that I was ever hangover, John. I was miserable for much of my time at Princeton, and I always said Hoagie Haven was like the only authentic place about that. Oh, what's it? 08544, 08540. Hoagie Haven's amazing. I should franchise that and make millions. But this is why I love you, John, because sometimes you say some crazy things, but on most major issues, we agree. Hoagie Haven's amazing. The NFL was amazing. And men should not compete in women's sports.
Men should not compete in women's sports. Yeah, I guess I agree with that. We don't need to dive into that anymore. Okay. The other thing I want to, so two more things I wanted to hit. One is the Boston Marathon. We'll have our big Boston preview podcast on Friday after we go to the press conference. That'll be for Supporters Club members. So join letsrun.com/subscribe. Join the Supporters Club. You get the free bonus podcast. Well, it's not free, but you got to join the Supporters Club. You get the bonus podcast every week. You get discounts on shoes. Get access, ad-free message board experience. You know, if you're a Let's Run fan, you're going to enjoy it. So we'll talk about Boston a bit more on Friday, but I feel like we should hit some of the storylines going into the race. A couple of them, Evans Chebet going for his third straight title. I actually talked to his coach, Claudio Baradelli, this morning, and he mentioned his build-up had some hiccups. He had some Achilles issues. It wasn't like they were able to get through it. His last few weeks have been pretty good, but he kind of admitted, you know, they're kind of going to rely on some of his experience. He's run close to 30 marathons at this point. He's won a bunch of majors, you know, won New York in 2022. But I was hearing this, I'm like, this is interesting because we're saying Chebet, he has been left off these two shortlists by Athletics Kenya for the Olympic marathon team. And I'm like, what did you guys make of that? You know, everyone's saying he should be on the team. He's like, well, he kind of understood he wasn't healthy at the time. And, you know, he's got a great track record on these courses, but I do think he kind of needs to show something. He needs to show, hey, I'm still in shape. Hey, I'm healthy enough to make it through this marathon if Athletics Kenya is going to trust him on the team. So I find that interesting because, you know, look at the past accomplishments. On paper, he should be the favorite. But, you know, if he's not 100%, you've got Cissé Lemma, who's coming off a 201 in Valencia. It's going to be interesting.
Very excited, John, because if Boston Marathon's here, this means it's officially spring. New York City half in the Northeast, maybe the unofficial opening of spring, but by Boston, the snow's done. So, but when I was on my vacation, the only Boston Marathon news I saw, sorry, Evans Chebet, was pretty sure it was a New York Times article by Matthew Futterman about people complaining about the finisher medal. Do you guys see that?
No, what was the complaint?
Oh, wow. Said it was too corporate because it says Bank of America on it. Meanwhile, I've been meaning to tweet out a few times. I've seen a lot of Bank of America signage for Boston Marathon. I bank there. When I go put in my ATM card, it says Bank of America, official sponsor of Boston Marathon. I think I saw a billboard or something in New York. I've seen something else with it as well. I can't remember what it was.
I don't know if it's just local TV here in Boston. I've seen a bunch of Bank of America ads promoting the fact that they're sponsoring the marathon. This is their first year after John Hancock was the longtime sponsor, but I think there's been a media push.
I'm glad you guys brought this up. It wasn't even on the show notes, but I've been stunned. Go to the ATM in Baltimore, Bank of America, Boston Marathon. And then I don't watch that much TV. I watch the Orioles games. There's always some like random person running the Boston Marathon explaining, like, now none of it is promoting the elite race. Let's be clear about that. But their money goes a long way to supporting the elite race. But it's like the guy pushing the wheelchair. It's, you know, you run for your own cause, Boston. So I'm thrilled that there's actually a sponsor who thinks it's important to highlight this. And they're doing it nonstop. Like, it's almost overkill for me.
I think, yeah, it's a net positive though, Robert. Again, they're putting money into the race. And the other, like the Boston Marathon, it's got a long tradition, 128 years. It's an American institution. When you say marathon in the United States, most people's first thought is either New York City Marathon or Boston Marathon. You know, that's what comes to mind. So it makes sense that they would want to, you know, make the most of their investment.
And I was wondering too, John, like you're running, oh, it's only in Boston. I was wondering, oh, I'm in Connecticut. I'm in New England. I wonder if it's a New England thing. We got Baltimore covered. People west of Baltimore, south of Baltimore, let us know if you're seeing it on your Bank of America's. But the logo kind of had color, John. It has the like Bank of America in its colors. Whereas like the Chicago Marathon, which Robert claims it's owned by Bank of America. But the official name of the Chicago Marathon is Bank of America Chicago Marathon. The Bank of America was just in gray. It wasn't like in the colors of Bank of America. But they ponied up a bunch of money. Get over it, people.
I agree. I feel like it should be the name. this is a pet peeve behind the scenes with John and me. If there's a sponsor of the website, I insist that he use the actual real name in the first sentence of the article, like the TCS, New York City Marathon, or whatever it is. And then the rest of the time, you don't have to say it, but the first time you should say it. Now, that may just be because my first job was for the IGA Super Thrift Tennis Classic in Oklahoma City, where Venus Williams won her first tournament, Serena played. But to me, the big thing with Boston, I spent an hour on Saturday morning writing a weather report. Boston is like the one major marathon where weather consistently can make a huge difference in whether how fast, whether you run super fast or super slow. It can be super hot. It can be super cold that hurts you. It can be a tailwind. It can be a headwind. There's four factors here. Now, the forecast, when I first put it out there from Apple Weather on Saturday, was like pretty much ideal. 49 degrees at the start. Winds out of the south. The course runs from the southwest to the northeast. So that's kind of a little bit, mainly going to feel like a crosswind, but it's going to be pushing you. The course finishes about, from what I can tell, about 7.5 miles north of where it starts. So if it's out of the south, you're getting 7.5 miles of push, even though a lot of it's coming from the side. You know, but then 2 days later, it was going to be kind of hot. High of 73, start at 59. But now, John, I looked at it just now, right now. They're kind of splitting the difference. 53 at the start. So I assume that would be like 64 at the finish. Not bad. The wind, apparently, people on the Let's Run forum are saying that the wind is the least predictable thing. You cannot predict it far out. The wind now is coming from the west-northwest, which wouldn't be as ideal. It'd be a little bit of a tailwind, but you'd rather have it from the south than from the north.
I feel like that 74 was borderline fake news, Robert, because Boston Marathon, first of all, Boston is perfectly scheduled in terms of location and the calendar to create the most hysteria about the weather. Because one, the course, like you said, headwind, tailwind, it's point to point, makes a huge difference. But also, Boston in April is totally unpredictable. It could be 80 degrees or it could be snow. And we've had both during the Boston Marathon. So it's perfectly situated to drive people insane. I'm not even running the race. I've only ran it once, 2016. Didn't go well. Didn't break 3 hours. And
what?
Yeah, I mean, my last month of training was terrible. I was in Portland for World Indoors, USA Indoors. It wasn't going well. And I qualified with a 235 and ended up running like 304. It was the last marathon I ever ran. Not fun.
You ran Boston Marathon as a Let's Run employee and how old were you?
I was 25.
You were in your 20s and you didn't break three.
Right. It was a disaster. It was a warm day and my last month of training was terrible. And it was just, I thought I was in going halfway through my buildup. I thought I was in shape to break 230. And then I was like, oh man, my last month of workouts were not good at all. And I got out a little, you know, I got out a little over eager, but that race just wasn't, I had nothing the last half. It was just a survival test. I stopped at every water station. I almost blacked out at mile 25, and we can do a whole episode. And I'd rather not go into all the details, but it was awful. The fans were amazing. That was the only good part. It was a great.
I don't remember talking about though. I guess we didn't have a podcast back then. I remember talking, I'm feeling like an a-hole. What year? What, 2016?
Yeah.
I didn't have a child then. Like, what was I? I feel bad.
We weren't as, we only knew me for, I'd only been working for you for 2 years. We don't have the relationship we do now. Anyway.
I was probably embarrassed, John. I thought we had to fire
you. It wasn't good. I'm glad you didn't fire me. Anyway. But Boston, I look at the weather every day and I was looking last week. I'm like, wow, it's going to be like mid 50s and cloudy. That's perfect for marathoning. And then I wake up Monday morning. I'm like, all right, 1 week from race day, what's it going to be? And my forecast said like high of 76. I was like, it was a high of 62 yesterday. What happened? And I tweeted it out. I'm like, this is the Apple weather app. I just didn't assume they were lying, but I look at some of these other weather forecasts online. And I'm like, well, okay, none of the other ones are saying high of 76. Maybe they just screwed something up. Now it's back to high of 64, partly cloudy. It's probably going to change a little bit. We're recording this Tuesday night, so it's 6 days from race day. But right now, looks like cautiously optimistic for a nice day. Certainly for spectators. The worry is you don't want it to get too warm for runners.
I can't wait.
Yeah, the other thing, I guess we'll talk about on the Friday show. There are a number of... I feel like the Kenyan Olympic trials aspect of this is quite interesting. Like Sharon Lokedi and Helena Obiri were both named to the shortlist of women for the Olympic team. And I feel like, Helena Obiri, I feel like even if she gets third or something, she won New York and Boston last year. She's a two-time Olympic silver medalist in the 5K. I was talking to Dathan Ritzenhine today for the preview and just saying, like, what do you think she has to do in Boston to make the team? And he was essentially like, I think she's already done what she needs to do to make the team. You know, she won New York and Boston last year. She's got two Olympic medals, but he even admitted, you never know with Athletics Kenya. Like, she DNFs, might they leave her off the team? They left Mary Kitani off the team in 2016 when she had an off day in the London Marathon. So it's going to be very interesting to me. That side effect. And then you got a lot of athletes trying to bounce back from the U.S. trials. Sarah Hall, Emma Bates, who didn't run the trials. She's taking a shot at this. Des Linden, Caroline Rotich, CJ Albertson. You know, there's actually quite a lot of Americans. Elkanah Kabet. There's a decent number of Americans for this being an Olympic trials here. And Jenny Simpson.
Can I say money grab?
Well, of course it's a money grab for some of them, but I mean, Emma Bates.
No, for Jenny Simpson, that's not fair to her. Like, I'm excited that Jenny still loves to run, but I just don't see her as a good marathoner.
Probably not, but I don't think it's fair to say it's a money grab for Jenny Simpson. She, like, there are people who didn't have the race they wanted at the trials who will be doing this. And I think she qualifies. She DNF'd. She doesn't want to DNF a marathon again, so this is an opportunity to capitalize on she did her whole build up. It's not like she was taking the trials lightly. She just didn't have a good day. But the other, like Emma Bates, missed out on the trials due to injury. CJ Albertson had a great day at the trials, but he's shown he can bounce back very quickly. So I expect him to run well as well. So I'm sure it helps that Boston pays appearance fees to Americans, but a lot of these athletes, I think, would be doing Boston. It just makes sense for them based on how the trials went or the fact they didn't run the trials in Bates' case.
But back in the day, I wouldn't have been excited for the American prospects. Now the Super Shoes, I'm like, of course they can bounce back. I mean, when were the trials?
February 3rd. Also in Rotterdam, Lenny Courier going for the Olympic standard in Rotterdam on Sunday.
I was just looking at Mary Kitani. What did she do in 2015? So, God, it's just... I'm having to recalibrate, John, when I look at, back when 2:18 was an amazing time in the women's marathon.
Well, I know she won New York that year. I think, was she second in London? I think Tiggy's 2:01.
So 2015.
I think Tiggy's 2:01 London that year.
Second in London, but look at these times. Second London, 2:23:40. That would now get you like 15th place. First place, 2:24 in New York. That she got ninth in London, was left off the team, won New York, won London the next 2 years. Actually, set a world record in London, her women's only world record, 2:17:01. So, but, pre-Super Shares, Mary Kitani was one of the best there was. I mean, she was basically winning, like, kind of every other marathon. Wins London, third New York. Wins London, fourth in the Olympics. Wins New York, second in London, first in New York. Ninth in London, first in New York. First in London, second in New York. And had a good run there. But if you look at her times, it's kind of fascinating. She only ran, she broke 2:20 in three races in her career. She finished 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 marathons. So can we refilm the Arcadia thing and say it's a shoestring?
Well, no, the thing is, like, Mary Kitani, yeah, she would, you could, back in the day, you could win a major marathon by running 2:20 or 2:21. In a race like London, sometimes you win in 223 because you might have people going out too aggressively and they'd pay for it. And nowadays, if you get a whole bunch of people going out crazy fast, one of them's probably going to hang on and run something pretty quick. Katani also, her 217.01 was phenomenal when she ran it, Robert. Remember, that was, no one had, I mean, she was still a minute 30 off of Paula Radcliffe's world record, but in a women's only race, no one had ever run that fast. Still no one has ever run that fast in a women's only race. And it was the first time I was like, someone had even, you know, 217. I don't think outside of Radcliffe, anyone had even broken 218 at that point. So for her to do that, and Tirunesh Dibaba was behind her in second, also in 217, that was just one of the runs I'll never forget watching that race. I was at like 4 a.m. metal department. It was like, this is absolutely phenomenal. So that 217, that's probably like a 212 with the shoes.
217 is 212?
217.01. I would say 217.01 is like 212 high. Maybe 213 low. What do you think?
So you're saying 4 minutes for the shoes? I don't think the shoes are worth 4 minutes in the marathon, no. But you're saying male pacers and the shoes 4 minutes? I think it's a little bit, I think you're exaggerating just a little bit, but not much. All this talk about women's fast times and world records, it reminds me of the Arcadia talk earlier and the shoes and the impact of the shoes. One argument that's been made on the message board about the shoes is an argument I've made too. It's like, well, the one thing that's confusing is like, if you look at the men's 1500, it's not like the top guys are running. You know, if we say the shoes are worth 3 seconds in the 1500, it's not like the 326 and 27 guys are running 323 and 324. But my response to that, having time to thought about it, is we don't know that those people back in the day were clean. Obviously, we don't know the people now are clean too, but you could be seeing, like, it could be that Jakob Ingebrigtsen is the fastest clean runner of all in history. And the shoes are helping him. But, you know, I mean, if you look at the all-time top five list in the 1500, like, let's be honest about this. Hisham El-Garoush, never tested positive, world record holder. God bless him. But I honestly don't know anyone that follows the sport really closely that thinks he's clean. He very well could be clean, but most people I say don't think that's the case. Bernard Lagat, he was cleared, and I think the Peter Ball clear case helps him greatly, but he had an A positive, B negative. The EPO test is subjective. He had a career all the way up to like 41, 43. So maybe he's the fastest clean runner ever, but there's some suspicion there. Esbjørn Kjerkebrøt, number three, positive. Number four, Ingebrigtsen. No, there's been zero allegations about him. And number five, Noureddine Morsali, Algeria, 327. Isn't he the guy that was coaching? Or is that Oweda, John, that was coaching? I don't know. Like, I think there's a lot of suspicions there too.
All right. Speaking of the 1500, Robert, we love the 1500 on this podcast. We talk about it all the time in the US and the Olympics and the World Championships and all this stuff. I want to talk about it at the Australian Olympic Trials. They're this week in Adelaide, Australia. It's one of those weird time zones. I was looking it up. They're like 13 and a half hours ahead of US Eastern time. So the track finals, it makes it very inconvenient to watch these races. The men's 1500 final is at 2:40 a.m. on Saturday morning. Any time zone that's like an extra half an hour off from US Eastern time, I'm already like, why you need the half an hour? You can't just do the full hour. It's confusing. Anyway, this race is stacked, though. I'm very excited for it. Hopefully I can wake up on Saturday morning and not see the results anywhere, because you've got the following people running. Stuart McSwain, Oliver Hoare, his first race since June 2023, 17-year-old Cam Myers, Adam Spencer, the NCAA runner-up in the mile from Wisconsin, who ran 3:31 last summer. Peter Boll has entered. I'm not sure if this is just a safety thing. I assume he's just focused on the 800. And then a potential dark horse, which maybe is an insult because he's run 3:33, but Jesse Hunt also in there has been running very well this season. So I think it's fascinating because you've got McSwain, who, you know, proven contender, likes to make it fast from the front, has had success in the circuit, beat Cam Myers when they raced in February at the Maury Plant meet. But Myers has been damn impressive, has looked really good, won the Australian 3K title a couple weeks ago. Adam Spencer's in good form, just narrowly missed out on the NCAA indoor title this year. And then Hoare, who at his best, Oliver Hoare's last race, he ran a 3:29 Australian record in Oslo. I mean, he's the Commonwealth Games champion from 2022. His last full healthy season in 22, he was one of the three best milers in the world that year for most of the Diamond League season. Didn't make the final at Worlds, but was really good. I would say he's the best guy in this race if he's fully healthy, but I don't think he's fully healthy because he's coming off of this osteitis pubis injury and has not raced in 10 months. So I'm fascinated by this whole event. Like, the selection, by the way, Australian selection policy is a little weird because they're not guaranteeing anyone spots. Like, you can get nominated. If you finish top two at the trials and you have the Olympic standard, they basically say they'll nominate you, but they also say just because we nominate you, necessarily you're on the team. But I feel like if you finish top two and you have the standard, there's going to be outrage if you don't get picked on the team. Anyway, that's sort of setting the stage. How do you guys see this one unfolding? Do you have a favorite for this race?
Okay, first of all, the Australian system is ridiculous. I mean, it's like third world. You're nominated, but you're not guaranteed. They need to crack this down. Like, I don't know. I guess cultures are different, man. Like, I think Australia is a free-willing place, but they really cracked down there during COVID. I feel like people like to throw their weight around. Like, oh, yeah, you're the top two, but I still would have a third spot. You're on the team. Oh, but just in case we want to change your mind, we can screw you over. And didn't they do that last year? It wasn't one of the top two, but they sort of like...
Abby Caldwell got screwed in 2022, yeah.
It's just like... Get over yourselves.
Abby Caldwell won the meet and was left off the team.
I agree mostly with him.
Weldon is spot on in this. He said third world. I was thinking, this reminds me of Kenya, where they had a 10-man Olympic marathon team, and now they've reduced it to 5 or 6. But one of the people on the 5 or 6 was not on the 10-man list. Thank God, because Evan Jibetz went to Boston, he needs to put on the list. Doesn't sound like he's talking to John. But John... Well, John consistently buries the lead on these stories. He just got off the phone with Dathan Ritzenheim. My take, not having talked to Dathan Ritzenheim, his coach, is Ollie Hoare has no shot in this race. Now, it's good for him because it doesn't matter. Like, it's a joke that they're having the trials May, June, July, or 5 months out from the Olympics. Wait, May, June, July. 4 months
out. Well,
it's
not a joke. It's the end of the Australian domestic season. It's the end of their summer. Like, I get why they're having it.
It is a joke. You should have the Olympic trials right before the Olympics. It would not be impossible to find a place in a country as big as Australia that is fairly warm, I imagine. Correct me if I'm wrong, Australian listeners. If there's not a place in Australia, shit, you could have it indoors if you had to. In July. You could run a 1500 in like 60 degrees.
I'm sure they could, yes.
Or you could have it actually in another country like Ethiopia does. So they should really just postpone the Olympic trials or say at least the winner goes. Like, otherwise, it's like, what's the point? So Ollie Hoare, to me, not having talked to Ritz, John, correct me if I'm wrong, has no chance of this, winning this race.
But
it doesn't really matter.
I disagree with that. Look, I asked Ritz about this, and, you know, I don't think this was the smoothest recovery back from this injury, because if it was smooth, he would have been racing a bit indoors. I think they would have liked to have raced, but they kind of realized, and he basically said, look, if the trials were a month later, we probably would have tried to race in the lead up, but we needed to really take as much time as we could getting fit and building fitness. And he said he was pleased with the last 6 weeks. Let me see what his exact, I'm trying to find if he had a money quote in here. He basically said he's in good shape. He's not in the best shape of his life. And he said, I think Ollie in good shape gives him a good chance to be top three. He's not the fittest he's ever been, but he's pretty fit. So I don't think that means no chance, but it's not as if like he's ready to rock this thing. He's definitely going to win. I think if they can go down there and he finishes top three and he comes out of it healthy, they'll be like, all right, this is a good result, because then he can show up in the Diamond Leagues and start rocking it. And if he does that, Australia's going to pick him onto the team. So I think that's getting top three is going to be a good result for him.
We got to pick a winner. I don't think it's going to be Hoare. You said Myers beat McSwain already?
No, McSwain beat Myers. But the interesting thing here is, like, this is a championship final. So I think the onus is going to be on McSwain to lead it, because that's what he likes to do. And I don't think he wants it to come down. He's going to have to outkick Cam Myers. Like, I don't know. Part of me. And then I guess Adam Spencer is in really good shape too. I wouldn't be surprised if Adam Spencer won this race.
Well, that's what I'm kind of saying is, like, as good as Cam Myers is, he's 17 freaking years old. Is he really going to win this race at 17? Like, would Ingebrigtsen even win this race at 17?
Ingebrigtsen won the European Championship at age 17. So, yeah, he absolutely could.
God. So, but I'm going to pick Adam Spencer, a guy that didn't even win NCAAs, to beat a 329 Hoare, a 17-year-old wonder kid.
And McSwain.
Hoare's not winning. And McSwain, I mean. Well, McSwain's running what, 329, 328?
329, yeah.
Okay, well, I got to pick a winner. I'm going with the boy that I doubted last year. Remember at NCAAs, John, where were we? Outdoors.
Austin.
He got second. He's like, yeah. I'm like, what's up next for you? He's like, oh, you know, I want to make worlds. I was laughing. His PR was like 335 at the time. I was like, yeah, good luck, dude. He made worlds. He didn't win NCAAs. Adam Spencer. I love McBurn. You're my
pick. I think I'm going Spencer. The thing that worries me is, I mean, I know he's in good shape. He did just run well at NCAAs. But the thing that worries me is all that travel down from Wisconsin, whereas like Cam Myers has just been in Australia the whole summer. He's been running really good. I mean, he's won some races and he's looked really impressive every time out. Like, I don't think it's crazy to suggest he could win this race, especially because I think, you know, because McSwain is going to be trying to lead it. And just, is he that much better than everyone else? Stuart McSwain's really good. I do have a lot of respect for him as a runner, but I don't know. The whole thing's really fascinating. I'm super excited for this race. How do you see it, Weldon?
Supposed to pretend to be an expert in Australian 1500 meter running? What about podcast guest Jai Edwards? He's the third fastest Australian.
I've heard he's banged up. I'm a little worried about. He's had injury issues, so he's the defending. Well, he won the trials, the lost Olympic trials. I'm not asking you to be an expert. I'm asking you to take the information we've provided to you throughout this episode in the last 5 minutes and draw a conclusion.
Okay, I've never heard of Jess Hunt. Now I'm just looking at the Australian 1500 list. You mentioned Caleb Davies. I don't even know that name. Yeah, I mean, do I see Cam Myers winning the race? My gut says no, but I don't have a lot of confidence in these other guys. Stuart McSwain seems to win nothing anymore, right? When's the last time he won a race?
Well, he won the Maury Plant meet. He beat Jake Whiteman and Cam Myers in that race.
Damn it, John. Don't let facts get in the way of it.
I agree with Weldon on that front. He's like an Ingebrigtsen. He seems flawed in the 1500, despite the fact that Jakob Ingebrigtsen is the Olympic champion. He's a rabbit.
No, but when you're a front runner, you're always going to be vulnerable in a championship 1500 final unless you're way better than everyone else. And the fact that, I mean, McSwain, you know, he beat some of those guys in Melbourne, but is he way better than Cam Myers? I'm not sure if I'm ready to say that.
By the way, on this podcast, I wanted to have like how many guys were in the fast seat or Arcadia? Like 37. I went and had the 37th guy in Arcadia, the one guy that didn't break 9 minutes. He ran like 9:10. That'd be cool to have him on the podcast.
Why would it be cool? Hey, you're the one guy. How did it feel to be the one guy in the race who didn't break 9 minutes? I'm sure he'd love to talk about that, Robert.
Just, dude, you'd be a legend. My buddy ran 9:12 in like 1995 and 1996 and was like top 10 in the country. Now you're 37th in one heat. But it would also be fun to have one Australian here. Like when you talk to Ritz, like how, like, do they think, oh my God, I think the pressure is like 10% of what the U.S. Olympic patrols are. They know deep down it doesn't matter shit.
Well, I don't think I wouldn't go that far. Again, if you, the guys with the standard right now in this race are
The big guns, the whores and the McSwains think, if I run well the rest of the year, I want to be top three or four here. If I run well this year, they're putting me on the team.
No, they're worried because Ollie Hoare doesn't have the time. They're thinking he may not be top three, so it's even more important to get in the top two in this case. Most years, yeah, you're right. They may not be worried. They're like, okay, I have a breakthrough afterwards. But also, I wish I sort of had like an intrinsic understanding of the Australian season. Like these races were the big race, February 22nd. Then I see like one race here in March. But these guys haven't, most of them haven't raced in like a month. And now we're like, essentially, it's not summer over there. It's like late fall now, right?
No, it's, well, or it's early fall.
Fall. Start of fall.
Yeah.
So it's like October. So, yeah, it's early fall. But I don't know.
Well, no. Well, your point, though, about like this thing mattering, it does matter because McSwain, Spencer, and Myers all have the standard. Like in the previous years, it would be rare for it to have three Australians, I think, with the Olympic standard. Maybe that is my understanding, I think. Whereas this time around, you know, especially having when the standard is this aggressive, but three guys have it. If those three go 1-2-3 at the trials, Australia is then going to have to leave off a guy who got third at the trials with the standard. I think they would do that if Ollie Hoare starts running really well over the summer on Diamond Leagues, but you know, they're going to force them to make some tough decisions. And if the top two finishers in this race have the standard, then they're going to be in a very strong position to go. There might be only one spot available. Like they're treating this seriously. Like Ollie Hoare, if he didn't think this was an important race, he wouldn't be flying down to run it as his first race in 10 months. He would just like skip it entirely. The fact that he's there shows that he views it as fairly important.
Correct. But I think it's better to be clear-cut. And that's why I think a pure trials is the best system. And that's why our world cross-country system, take the top 24 from world cross-country, limiting three per country. You're in the World Olympics for the 10,000. Everybody will show up at world cross-country from now on. It'll be good. By the way, ad read here. If you're a trial lawyer, I need you to, and you can practice in Maryland. I need you now. John Kell, I don't know if you guys can hear this. Hopefully this mic is, he's in terrible pain. He's screaming out. We need to sue this guy that hit him on the bike. I don't believe in lawsuits, but this dude's been damaged. So robert@letsrun.com. If you're a trial lawyer in Maryland, robert@letsrun.com. Thank you. People are going to be like, he's a conservative. Why is Rojo suing? Because if you cause damage to somebody else, you pay for it. That's why.
All right. Robert, at the risk of opening myself up to some crazy take of yours, I just see one sentence here in our Google Doc that we use to plan out the show. It says, bad news for Grant Fisher. There's no more information about this line. Is this just leftover from a previous episode? Is this just something you write down every time? Or was there an actual news item that led you to put this line in the show notes?
No, there was.
Does it involve Berahu Arigawi? Because you know Berahu Arigawi beat Grant Fisher in the Olympic 10K final, right?
He was younger than Grant Fisher at the last Olympics, and he beat him in the 10,000. Grant was fifth. Arigawi was fourth. Everyone thinks this is a great Olympics for Grant. He's going to medal in 2024. And I said, that's not necessarily the way it works. It's the same thing if you're a college kid right now and you think, I was fifth in the conference as a sophomore. I'm going to win as a senior. You're probably not because...
Robert, this was a joke. I didn't ask you to recycle the take you've provided on the show a million times.
Okay, but I'm just saying, like, generally, there's someone younger than you ahead of you or close to you, and there's going to be a couple phenoms coming up from behind you. But for Fisher, good news is Joshua Cheptegei did not medal world cross country. Bad news is Caprimo did. I don't see Fisher beating Caprimo. I've said that before many times. And then this week, Kenya's been down. Like, I mean, honestly, like they don't have like consistent like guys in the 1500 anymore. I guess they've got a couple of decent guys in the 5000, but it's like, okay, who's going to be Fisher? Well, Daniel Abeno, who won silver last year in the 10,000, just had a good result. Well, I guess, is this really that good? Now, he skipped out on World Cross Country, John. I'm assuming he did not run the Kenyan Trials, but our results database, if somebody dropped out of the Kenyan Trials, they probably would not put that in there. But he didn't run World Cross. And he ran the Berlin Half a week later. And they said he was going for the world record. So I'm assuming he skipped all of that because he thought, I want to get the world record in the half. And I'm assuming he's in good shape. The winning time, 59:30, is not impressive, although it is 13 seconds faster than the American record. But the dude went out in 13:28 for the first 5,000. So I'm just saying, like, this guy's in good shape. If he's not beating Caprimo, I don't think he's beating Abinio. So we've only got one more medal. Cheptegei, Kajelcha.
So, okay. This
I don't
is,
know.
This
could
is,
this is like, Sebastian yeah. Shalway, by the way. Sebastian Shalway of Kenya ran 58:24 last week. Now, I think Grant, as good as Shalway is in the half marathon, I mean, Shalway's got almost no track credentials. I'm not even sure if he's even going to try to run the track in the Olympics. Grant might be able to outkick him in 10,000, but I don't know, man. 58:24 is pretty good.
I don't think Shalway is going to be running the 10K on the track this summer. And this is like your Matthew Centurions isn't doing anything because he got beat in some road mile in December in Hawaii. Like, some guy who medaled on the track last year just ran a 59:30 half marathon, and that's the evidence you need to say Grant Fisher's not beating him? It's absurd. The guy went out too fast, and then, or he went out world record pace, couldn't even come close, and that's your evidence he's definitely going to beat Grant Fisher. There's only one medal up for grabs now. It's a ludicrous take. You need to calm down.
I didn't say he was definitely going to be beaten.
You said there's one medal left. Did you not?
I'm just getting worried. I think you and I on a podcast, months or years ago, said we expect Fisher to eventually medal because he's got, 21 Olympics, 22 Worlds, 23 Worlds, 24 Olympics, 25 Worlds. But in none of those Olympics does he have a greater, or Worlds, does he have a greater than 50% chance of taking a medal. All right, in other news, John, a man by the name of Russ Cook has run from the most northern point in all of Africa, from the most southern point of all of Africa to the most northern point of all of Africa. And I'll say what no one else will say. This run went kind of what like you'd expect. You say someone's going to run across from Africa, and what happened? Well, he did get robbed and kidnapped at one point, so it's not exactly the safest of all continents, but an amazing feat. There's been some controversy because people are claiming he was saying that he was the first to do it. But I'm actually just clicked in like six different articles. They all are pretty accurate describing the feat. He's the first person to run from the largest distance in Africa, from the most southern to the most northern part, or from northern to southern. Two other people, though, have actually run vertically the length of Africa. But they all did it on the eastern side, which is a little bit shorter, from basically Cairo to Cape Town. So I kind of got annoyed this week when I think it was one of the British pundits said that the people pointing this out were killjoys. I'm like, no, this is called journalism. Like, a journalist's job, and Let's Run gets in trouble for this, is to ask questions that put things in perspective and a little bit uncomfortable. Like, some people were upset that a journalist from Outkick asked the South Carolina women's basketball coach, like, what do you think about men competing in women, or men, meaning trans women, competing in women's sports? To me, that's an obvious question that should be asked. And the fact that no one has ever asked her that question in like the last 5 years is shocking to me. So I'm glad that this organization points out that he's not the first to do it. And let's just put it in perspective. It's an amazing feat. Crazy, by the way.
Yeah, I saw he finished wearing an England football kit, which, man after my own heart. But yeah, it's what I was just thinking, like, the weather he must have gone through and all those different countries, it's just a long, long way. So yeah, it was almost 10,000 miles, Robert. I mean, that's, the US is like 3,000 miles across. So imagine.
Really?
Yeah, that was the distance he ran. It was almost 10,000 because he's starting. I think the way he did it is he ran kind of along the coast. So you're going from, you know, the bottom of South Africa all the way up to the highest part of Tunisia, which is sort of in the middle of Northern Africa. So that's pretty crazy to run that far. It didn't even take him a year to do.
Well, no, it took him more than a year.
No, I think it took him less than a year. It was the equivalent of 377 marathons. Yeah, about a little under 10,000 miles. And it took him a little less than a year. I think 352 days.
Oh, yeah. The previous guy who went on the eastern side took less than a year. Yeah, I am curious, John. He pretty much goes, you know, South Africa, Namibia, Angola, a couple countries that don't appear to have names on this map I'm looking at, Nigeria. And then instead of going just straight, he's almost there. No, he's not. I mean, he's almost there. He's like two-thirds of the way there. Instead of going straight through Niger and Algeria, he heads due west and then has to come back east. And then so I'm wondering, is a desert too much to take?
Yeah, he'd be running like 1,500 miles through the Sahara Desert. Yeah, I think he made the right choice by hitting the coast. So looking at the desert, you know, kind of goes all the way to the ocean on Western Africa. So, I mean, I'm sure by the ocean.
We don't hear much about these countries nowadays, do we? Like, is Niger just all desert? Algeria, Mali? If you're a geography expert, just email me, robert@letsrun.com, robert@letsrun.com. It's kind of fascinating. Chad, so, I mean, what's going on? I can see from my topical map, it's all like brown. So I'm assuming that there's not much going on there. Like, okay, John, if you're preparing for your Jeopardy career, what is the population?
I can already tell you that question's never going to be asked on Jeopardy. What's the population of a country? They'll never ask you that question.
How big?
How big? That's even less likely. I'm supposed to know the square mileage? No one knows that sort of stuff. Ask me a capital. Maybe I'd have a chance.
I think it must be all desert, John. Niger. I was going to ask you about this on Jeopardy, but it's 1/8 the size of the U.S., but it only has 22 million people.
Thanks. I'm glad you spent 10 minutes looking that thing up, Robert, so we have that stat for the end of the show.
Okay, John, did we ever get your prediction for the Australian Olympic trials?
I think I'm rolling with Spencer. I know he's fit and ready to go for a championship, but like Cam Myers has been incredibly impressive. I just wonder, like, 17-year-old going up against the seniors. He's run well against them on the Australian circuit this year, but is he still going to have something at the end of the season? I think probably, because he went to Europe last year and still ran well after the domestic season. Like, I'm just worried about picking a 17-year-old. I think Adam Spence has been in a few more championships, and that's why I'm going with him, because I think he can kick. I'm a little worried about McSwain leading a race. But I don't feel super confident about anything. I think there's like 4 or 5 guys who can win this race. So that's why I'm excited to see. But gun to my head, I'll go Adam Spencer.
What about on the women's side? The leader on the women's side is I don't forget how old she is. 18. She turns 19 any day now. Yes, Claudia Collingsworth, 18. She turns 19 on Friday. She's run 4:02.96. Lyndon Hall has run 4:05.41. Obviously, you have Jessica Hole, who I think ran, the quick 3,000, ran 8:37 last month, as did Georgie Griffith.
Well, she ran 8:24 to get the fourth place at World Indoors. That's an Australian record. And she also ran 4:01 en route to a 4:19 mile at Millrose. Jessica Hall's clearly my pick for the women's win. But I mean, Claudia Hollingsworth obviously has had a great season. So I'm excited to see what she does. She's also entered in the 800. She's run 1:58 in the 800. So that the 15 may not even be her best event. So we'll see.
Interesting note. There's only, we put this in our weekly written recap. By the way, every week we do this podcast. We'd love to hear from you. 844-LETRON, 844-538-7786. We also generally, almost every week, we're religious about the podcast. I would say it's like 90% written recap week that was. And in that, on Monday, I published the fact that Hollingsworth is, you know, if she breaks four, now if she wants to do it as an official under 20 athlete, she has to do it this year because she'll turn 20 next year. But only one human being, not from China or from Africa, has done it under the age of 20, and that is...
You're asking me? Addie Wiley.
Yes, John, you know her name. No, Addie Wiley did it at 19, but she was not an official athlete, under 20 athlete last year. She was turning 20 that year. The famous South African, Zolabud did it way back in the day. So there's your trivia for the week. Thank you for joining us. Look, Friday's show is going to be amazing because Friday is always the Boston Marathon press conference. John's talked to Ritz. He's talked to some of these coaches from Africa. But on Friday, we'll talk to the athletes. So we'll give you the inside scoop. I'm hoping now with betting legal in the U.S., there'll actually be betting odds in these races. We'll help you make money, folks. Join the Supporters Club today. It'll pay for itself. Letsrun.com/subscribe. Letsrun.com/subscribe. Until Friday, see you later.